For March 2nd, 2017, it's the Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 206. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, co-host of the show, friend and developer, Mike Herschel. Hey, Mike.
Welcome, Matt. How are you doing?
Super. So, Mike, you're fresh off of Drupal Camp Florida, right? Florida Drupal Camp happened. There was an alligator. I saw pictures.
There was an alligator, and it was probably the best Drupal Camp in the history of Drupal Camp.
So I've heard. You always do a good job down there. So today we're getting together on the podcast, and we're going to be talking with a few of the folks from our design department.
Yes, yes. We're going to be talking about usability testing methods and what it is, why it's important, and who really cares about it.
So Lullabot is known to be a Drupal company, right? We do a lot of work in the Drupal space as far as, you know, we can assist you with your Drupal website. We can build you a Drupal website. You can consult with us. But we have some really smart, talented designers on our team, too.
Yeah, we do. We have a complete design team and content strategy team, so we can kind of do everything from the beginning.
And usability testing, kind of what we're going to be talking about today, some of the methods to take something that might be a little subjective, like design, and really kind of get some objective criteria and judge whether something's good or not, right?
Yep. First on the list, we have a senior UX designer here at Lullabot, a Buffalonian from Buffalo, New York. I got that off of Wikipedia. Jen Witowski. Welcome, Jen.
Hey, how are you?
Jen, I have a quiz for you. How did Buffalo get the name Buffalo?
I can tell you it's not because we have Buffalo.
No, it's because of Buffalo wings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Second up today, we have Maggie Greiner, a senior UX designer from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Maggie.
Hello. Hey. How are you?
Awesome. So why is South Carolina the iodine state?
Oh, you've asked me this before. I think it has something to do with the soil and the ocean.
All right. And it has nothing to do with buffalo.
That's it. Or wings.
So next up, we have another senior UX designer from Lullabot here, from Providence, Rhode Island, whose claim to fame is designing a box of Kraft mac and cheese, and it's been all downhill since. Welcome, Marissa Epstein.
Thank you, Mike. I always appreciate that random fact getting pulled out. So yeah.
Every time I go to the store, I look for this just because I'm gonna snag one and have you autograph it.
Well, it's cheesy explosion, yeah. And I appreciate that over Rhode Island trivia, which I couldn't answer.
All right, good. Okay, so usability testing. What is usability testing?
So usability testing is what it sounds like. Usability testing. It's when we take our designs and our ideas and we test them with actual users who will be using that design or that website or that app to get feedback from them on how well we are doing as designers, making sure that we're meeting all their needs.
Gotcha. So you create the design, you run it by the users in some type of environment or on a computer, or how does that work?
Well, it can work a ton of different ways. We can get into a lot of the process and nitty gritty if you want, but at a high level, we can really pick based on where we are in the process. So if we want to show sketches, we can easily do that and see if users understand what they're looking at. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't get to the usability testing until the end of the project, and we already have something that's been developed and they can click around that. And then there's lots of steps in between prototyping and using designs and that sort of thing. But one thing I want to differentiate here is, this is a form of research, but it's very different from doing user research or interviews or things like that at the beginning. We're really focusing on showing them an actual concept and seeing how they react to what we've made.
So why is this important? Is it pretty normal for users to highlight specific problems?
The biggest one I'll say is that we're not the users. You know, mm-hmm. we're making assumptions about our audience if we're not checking with them to see that it's meeting their needs. So it's, you know, we tried upfront to have personas that we're designing to and understand their goals and how they might see things, but we often just don't know. We're also really close to the problem. So we might not notice something that's confusing because we have a really in-depth understanding of it. A good example of this is with language. So we might label a button and say that makes sense to us because we know what a publication source name is. But they think of that as a newspaper, and that doesn't make sense to them. And so we want to make sure, you know, how they would view that and what they're interpreting.
Marissa, you mentioned that you aren't, you know, one of the users of the client's website or whatever we're designing, whatever we're building. But I think that also a lot of times isn't true for a stakeholder who might be a little myopic in their perspective of what they're actually trying to accomplish sometimes.
Absolutely. A lot of times we're using this to combat statements like, well, that's not how I would do it. And that's something that I hear a lot is, well, I like to use my phone this way. And so this is how it should be. And we kind of have to say, oh, which persona are you? You know, which user of the site are you? And if they don't fit that, it is a very helpful way to make your case and say, we really need to be going to the people that will be using it.
I think one of the things, too, that I wanted to add to that is sometimes when you have multiple stakeholders on a project, sometimes their ideas kind of conflict. And that's when usability testing can be used to kind of validate ideas and kind of resolve some of those conflicts that can happen in between ideas between stakeholders.
Yeah, stakeholder Thunderdome at the boardroom table can kind of be intense sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody kind of has what they're polling for and their idea of what the right answer is. But when you can actually put it in front of users, you can get some validation or maybe, you know, realize that, hey, somebody was, they, both of you were wrong or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When our clients are, you know, hiring us for, you know, a lot of the times we have a specific timeline that we're working within. And, you know, sometimes those timelines can get tighter and tighter and tighter. And, you know, usability testing, that's something we're trying to work on is completing that task in an efficient way. So it does require extra time, I think, to add it to, to add it to our list of things that we need to accomplish for the project. But in the end, for stakeholders and their ensuring the investment, the quality of the investment they've made with us and the design work we're creating, usability testing goes a long way towards, actually decreasing the overall amount of time that we spend on the project because we're getting to those issues faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just gonna say that. It seems like not doing usability testing can kind of bite you in the ass. I know one thing that was brought up earlier is like sometimes it can come in late. Do you have any stories or any situations that you were involved with without maybe mentioning clients' names where not doing that has caused problems or mm-hmm. doing it has maybe saved potential issues?
I have an example where we got to it a little late in something and a user was going through the flow and just sort of said, how can I change my password? And we just laughed because we completely forgot it. Wasn't there. And we said, that's a great question. And we really should have thought of that, you know, and, it's easy to find bugs that way and that sort of thing that you would have wished that you discovered before it's in front of somebody.
So is earlier better? I mean, the earlier answer was, you can do user testing throughout the whole process of the project, but getting it in front of users as early as possible, is that better?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I would say at least before development for me, that's a big cutoff is don't spend the time building something that then you find out doesn't work. The issue with as early as possible for me is sometimes what you're using, the artifact is confusing to them. So, I might wait on not showing the sketch prototype. I'm going to wait or even a wireframe if I made it in a really crummy way. I'm going to wait till I have at least designs that make sense and then string those together but we can save, you know, weeks and weeks of development work if we catch something that just needs to be thrown out.
When we had done usability testing earlier using Sketches, we had tested specific components. So it wasn't a whole design. It was just like testing the navigation and the nomenclature and the organization of the navigation to make sure users understood where they could find stuff, how they could use search. We avoided doing a whole design when it comes to sketching because, you know, I agree with Marissa, the artifact can get really confusing. So,
yeah. So how do you test just a component? I mean, do you just kind of, I mean, to me, like, I don't know, navigation can be pretty straightforward, you know.
I'm with you, Mike. So the question to me was, you know, as developers, as the propeller heads here, like, if you don't have anything built, what are you actually showing them? How does that work?
We had showed sketches. So we had actually scanned in sketches of navigation with actual nomenclature. And then we had asked the users specifically to look for something specific in the navigation. And we recorded what they clicked on, how many clicks it took them to find it in the mm-hmm. navigation to make sure that the organization and that the actual navigation was well understood.
That makes a lot of sense. Do you have any stories where you were, you know, doing user testing and you were told to do something and you're like, oh, this is horrible, but then the user testing proved you right, or in that case, you know, proved you wrong?
I have a few of these.
you do? I'm surprised.
Mike is baiting me because he knows this because we've had some of these conversations in a recent project. But there are a lot of times, you know, we keep talking about stakeholders where they're making assumptions and I'm making an assumption as well, and we don't agree with each other. And sometimes at that point, we have to just say, it's time to stop talking about it and we're going to test it. And we're going to see if this is a problem instead of guessing. But one of the biggest ones recently, to be more specific, was we had a client that wasn't familiar with responsive design or mobile web patterns because it was an entirely desktop application. And so it was one of those times where we needed to get things out in front of users and show them that mobile wasn't going to be a problem. We had some, you know, fairly basic patterns as far as how filters might reveal and menu might reveal, and they thought that users would never get it. And so it was very satisfying, I admit, to throw an Envision prototype in front of users and see them all do the right thing.
What is an Envision prototype before you get too far?
Yeah, so I was going to mention that earlier, actually, but it's kind of a rabbit hole. It's very, very cool for this sort of thing. I highly recommend it's one of my favorite tools for doing usability tests. Envision is a website that allows you to drop in static design files or sketches. I'm actually using it with sketches now. Mm-hmm. And you can, one thing you can do that's very handy that's separate from this is share it with clients for feedback, and they can comment and navigate through the designs and mark things as approved. But you can also use it for prototyping. So you can select an area of a sketch or a design and hotlink it to another one. Some of the interactions can get pretty fancy. So you can actually let people click around and figure it out. So to Jen's example earlier, sometimes we can do usability testing in a creative way where we ask them where they think they'd find something, or if it doesn't interact, we can just ask them what they would expect to happen. But with Envision, they can actually click around in as much functionality as you've built and let them kind of get lost and find their way out on their own.
Yeah, we've also experimented with, you know, different ways of recording these usability tests. And Envision, when we use Envision Live Share, like one tool that we've been using in order to record the usability tests in order to just go back and check our notes is ScreenFlow. So ScreenFlow is a pretty cool app to check out if you just need a really simple way to, you know, to record the audio and then the, you know, recording your screen and watching the person click around and also getting their audio.
Cool.
Where do these people come from? We've talked about putting it in front of users. Like, how do we get users?
I thought we got them on the side of the interstate.
Maybe. I mean, that could work like from that, what is it, the shared commuter lane or something, right? We would just stop there and say, hey, come here for a second.
I'm not advocating for picking up strangers in your vans. Let's just throw that out.
I tried. It wasn't successful. So
yeah. There's a few different ways that we can do this. You can recruit. We've had some success with using social media. It's not great, but if you know that, for example, testing lullabot.com, we know that our users are the sorts of people following us on Twitter. We can mm-hmm. reach out to our users. And often clients have a similar approach where they have an email list or they have signups or something that you can start from to get their actual users. And so that I always recommend. If you can't, there are websites like usertesting.com that are really, they're awesome and a little expensive, but it's awesome that you can actually specify what your demographic is. If you say you need undergrads that are in poli-sci, they can curate that for you and give you a list of recruits really easily.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah. These people then get paid to do the job, like mm-hmm. get paid to check your navigation and see if it makes mm-hmm. sense or...
Yeah, we should always have incentives when you can, even if it has to be a little scrappy. I've bought friends a beer and said, you know, you can keep drinking as long as we're testing and then have an hour or so, which helps them not be antsy that the test's going long, too. But they should have something, a gift card, you know, depending on what you can offer. But I'll say one more thing about recruiting is, you know, especially for some of the things that are just mistakes, you still want to get someone in front of it, even if you can't get your exact audience. You know, don't give up on usability testing. I have tested things with my parents because they are not very familiar with a lot of web patterns. And they're not.
Had to think, so nice.
Say that. Yeah, they'll probably listen to this too.
I've done the same thing where I've used my parents to test yes. or friends and family who fall mm-hmm. into the fall into a persona that would use the site or actually do use the site. There's a couple of times where I've had friends and family that have actually used the site that we were redesigning. That was just by happenstance that happened, but you know, definitely, definitely, reach out to people who kind of fall into that persona if you don't have the resources or the time to do a recruit. So, mm-hmm.
So how do we incorporate usability into the design process? I know we talked about doing it early. Do we also do it with fully functioning prototypes? Do we do it with fully functioning HTML? Are there best practices around that, sort of kind of just doing it all the time?
I'm just asking where it fits in the process.
Yeah. I mean, I know we just talked about doing it a little bit earlier, but do we ever do it at the end of the phase or anything like that?
Yeah, yes. I think usability testing, it happens even after launch. We've worked with clients before that have a usability testing plan set up after they launch a website. So that can help inform what phase two and what phase three looks like as they continue to evolve and revise the site.
Yeah, okay. It really depends between each client. Like every client that we have is kind of a... where the usability testing falls is kind of, it's a dance with that particular client because it's, it depends. A lot of clients recently actually that have come to us have already done, they've maybe already done some usability testing and they have those results for us to review with them. So say if we're redesigning a site, for example, they might already have usability tested their current site and they have a number of, issues that they can identify and opportunities. So we're able to really quickly then move forward and start iterating on, and coming up with new design ideas to solve those problems. And then we might save the usability testing for our new ideas, down the road towards the end, after we've kind of come up with ways to solve the problems that they came to us with the initial usability testing, data that they brought. So some clients are kind of in different, stages than others when they come to us. And we're also, it kind of depends, like we were saying earlier, we really try to get our biggest bang for our buck with the usability testing. So we try to spend the most quality time possible on this process, and we're really trying to make it as efficient as possible. So in order to do that, we can't ask all of we can't always ask, you know, 100% of all the questions that come to us. You know, sometimes we have to lean on best practices and you know, and move forward. But we really try to take what are the most important questions that we have and make sure those are bubbled up to the top. And even on the tightest timeline, we definitely want to get those tested, because that's going to be the biggest bang for our buck. And, you know, and sometimes that can fit in earlier in the process or later in the process, depending on the exact type of question that it is.
How do you know when to stop doing usability testing? I'm assuming we do multiple rounds. When do we know that we have everything perfect and just, you know, to stop spending money on it?
One thing that I think is important is to limit the number of participants in the round. Yeah. I think as Jacob Nielsen says, you only need 5, and that you cover 80% of the errors that you're going to catch within the first 5 people. And then it really drops off in the value. And so keeping the revision, the round short as well. But honestly, I don't usually do that many additional rounds. I might say we want to test it, make sure it's working, and then cover everything again when it's launched or when it's developed or something like that, and then kind of treat it on a case by case. But to Maggie's point, it depends on, one, what the client's needs are and how much of a budget and appreciation they have for that sort of thing, because sometimes you really only get the one chance with them, but also what are the goals that you're trying to accomplish? Because if it's really, really rich functionality and there's a lot of different moving pieces, you might have to do it a few times. If you're just checking language with them, you know, you can do that early and once, hopefully, I should say.
That makes some sense.
Who's Jacob Nielsen?
He is I don't know what his technical title is, but he runs the Nielsen Norman Group as sort of this amazing user researcher that does a lot of books and case studies and how to. So he's a great resource.
Not Nielsen, the TV ratings guy?
Not the TV ratings guy.
Okay, just checking. So it sounds like, though, I mean, in general, websites are kind of this living, breathing document that evolves over time. Having something like user research coming in and testing like this is an iterative process that fits very well. Just over time, you can continue to get better and change and evolve.
I would assume so, but then you also have the factor of budget. I mean, how often is budget a factor?
Like, if there's a lower budget with a site that we're doing, we tend to do usability testing not as often in the process. So, you know, we may try and talk them into, you know, working in at least one round of usability testing and trying to figure out where that usability testing fits into that process, depending on the project. So, you know, we're going to test, you know, with sketches, or we're going to test, you know, with, you know, full designs. Sometimes what we do is, if that doesn't work into their budget, sometimes what we do is we recommend a usability testing plan for them. So we'll write up something for them that they could use after launch that they could either come back to us for, or they could, you know, hire, look within their team for them to conduct usability testing. So
I find it's usually one of the first things to get cut. This is just in my limited experience, but I feel like a lot of times certain clients are thinking of design as just the UI and not mm-hmm. the UX side. And so at the end of the day, they need a website or a product to have visual documentation of some kind that a developer can implement, right? And so I think it's hard sometimes for them to accept the additional budget required to make sure that those screens are going to work for their users and that the language is right and that they go to the right place. And so I've found that usually, yeah, the user research and the usability testing are kind of on the chopping block first.
So since Lullabot is a remote or a distributed company where we're all, you know, in our own home offices working somewhere, these tests are also executed remotely as well. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Does that change the way we have to do things?
It'd be a good time to talk about moderated versus unmoderated.
Sure. Yeah.
So
there's a difference between moderated and unmoderated testing. Basically, moderated testing is when somebody is there kind of asking questions and helping guide the user through all the tasks that they should be completing. Unmoderated testing is when the user who is being tested kind of goes through the site on their own with either having a list of questions and then that being recorded. And then the person who is conducting the usability testing can go back afterwards and review it. We typically, Marissa, I don't know if you want to jump in.
Oh, no. I will say the reason that I thought it would be worth making that distinction is with the question of remote testing. Mm-hmm. I think that unmoderated is great for remote work because we can set it and forget it. We can send out a link. We can set something up to get more quantitative questions answered. And that I think works really well for remote, but where we might find some limitations is with moderated testing. And there's still a lot of ways that we can do it. We have, ScreenFlow was mentioned and Envision and even a Hangout. There's a lot of ways that we can connect with people, but some of the more successful moderated testing that I've had has been, you know, as I joked, like over a beer, over a computer, because you can see right there that they're frowning and they're maybe saying something is fine, but looking frustrated, and you can read a little more into their thinking.
Mm-hmm. And there are apps that you can use that actually records the facial expression. Mm-hmm. But finding that a program that does that remotely, it's been a little bit difficult for us. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a business opportunity for somebody.
Yes. So for now, there is Silverback, which I really like for in-person moderated testing.
So what is Silverback?
There's a ton of features, but it simply is a program that allows you to record both the screen and the camera. Okay. So you can see a person in the corner of the video looking at the screen, you can see what they're doing on screen, you can record the audio, and then it allows you to do some other power user things like cutting them up to make highlight reels, or you can add chapters and just flag in the video where users had problems, and so it can help for reviewing it later to decide what you do want to change.
One of the big things that I want to point out too is with remote usability testing, you want to make sure that it's easy as possible for the user to participate in the usability testing. So we try and avoid anything where they have to go in and install stuff on their computer ahead of time, just because, you know, that adds a level of difficulty. And plus it kind of adds a level of privacy. Maybe, you know, they may question, you know, why am I installing this program on my computer? But they do have, I think Validately is a program. It's kind of like usertesting.com. Mm-hmm. It's a pay per month. Through the web, it actually activates their webcam, the user's webcam. So you can record, you know, their face and their expressions as well as record their screen and audio. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's so great about Envision Live Share links is, you know, we're reaching out to an interviewee and our process that we're using most of the time now, but we're always evolving and changing, is, you know, simply sending them an Envision Live Share link and then also sending them a conference line to dial into. And so they could dial into the conference line and then hit the link so that we're all looking at the same thing in the live share. But there's no, to Marissa's point, there's no other software to download, you know, or logins to have or so forth. And then we do a flow or your app of choice for us to be able to, you know, record the audio and the screen. But of course, that's kind of bare bones. Because like Jen mentioned, we're not getting the facial expressions and, you know, the additional functionality of these more expensive applications like Silverback. But, you know, it's a balance.
We're talking usability testing methods with Olobot's design team. When we get back, we'll talk about how they actually do this, the process from beginning to end for usability testing, coming up right after this.
Welcome back. We're talking usability testing with Lullabot's design team.
Right? Almost the whole design team.
Yeah. We're missing someone somewhat important here, right?
Yep. We don't have Jared, our creative director.
That would be Jared Ponchat. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he listens to this. Hi, Jared.
Hi.
Hello. So let's give a background of just our design team, right? Like Lullabot does design, but we're more well known, I think, for Drupal, but we've done some prominent design stuff. Is that correct?
That's right.
No.
The last time we had the podcast, Mike, with the design team, I know that Jen was hot off of the This Old House project, which is something that we did design work for, but not Drupal work for.
Yep, that is correct. And we actually did some usability testing in This Old House, specifically with the navigation. So,
did you learn anything interesting in the navigation, or did it just serve to validate what you created?
Well, we learned a couple of things. The This Old House navigation, it used to be a pretty large navigation. It had, I think, over 8 or 9 items in the actual navigation. And we thought maybe we could pare that down to 3.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
Then, yeah, based on user modes, we did some research and there were, you know, we found that users were going into using This Old House. They fell into one of these 3 user modes. One of them was like how-tos. They were there to learn how-tos. One of them was for inspiration. Like, you know, they're redecorating or, you know, redoing a kitchen and they're looking for, you know, different countertops that they could use or, you know, different ways of organizing how their kitchen could be laid out. And then the third was to actually watch the This Old House TV shows. So we thought maybe we could pare the navigation down to those 3 things and have all of the categories fall under those 3 things that the user would be interested in. So
yeah, I'm looking at that right now, but I do see a more button over there. So you didn't throw everything in there, right?
No. Yeah. So the more button was kind of the catch-all. So there was certain things that This Old House team wanted to make sure that didn't get lost, especially when it came to sponsored content. They have a lot of advertising and sponsored content on their site, and they wanted to make sure that that was something that wouldn't get lost in the navigation. So that's why we had like more was kind of like the catch-all where, certain content didn't fall under those 3 main user modes.
Nice. Well, it looks good. Good job. So is there anything else that we can mention that of prominent companies that we've done design and or usability testing for?
We did some usability testing with I think we had done some with MSNBC when we had worked on, we had done some UX work on their watch experience.
Okay. So, that was the Operation Watch, I believe,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if the listener doesn't know, Lullabot has done MSNBC.com, and I guess we had a couple different projects with those. I know we did Operation Watch, which I believe, I wasn't on that project, but my understanding was it had something to do with kind of watching the election.
No.
No? Yeah. I am completely wrong.
No idea what you're talking about.
That's a horrible name.
So it was basically their TVE experience. So when they...
TV Everywhere experience.
Yeah, TV Everywhere experience.
Okay.
They had come to us and they had a great desktop experience, but they needed some help and advice on how to break that down for smaller devices. So what we did is we kind of took what they had done for desktop and we had started with the smallest device, which was mobile. And then we kind of built it up from there. And so it was kind of our team and the MSNBC design team working in conjunction with each other to make sure that we had a great product.
Okay, that sounds great. Anything else that we can mention?
And we also worked on, we helped to redesign genealogybank.com.
Okay.
That was a project from this past fall. That was a really fun project. And that definitely included usability testing. Like we talked about earlier, they're a good example of a client that came to us with a lot of research, a lot of design research and usability testing conducted before they came to us. So it's a great scenario for us, especially with a redesign with a site that's been around for a long time, like genealogybank.com. Then we were able to move into the design process quicker, and then used our usability testing time on the new solutions that addressed the problems that they had seen in the usability data that they brought to us.
Great, great.
And there have been others, but darn those NDAs.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right.
But they were great. I'm telling you, they were fantastic. They were fabulous.
They were great.
They were huge.
Vaguely.
Yeah. So what does the design team look like at Lullabot? How many employees do we have, and how many people are typically on a project? I know we're kind of getting outside of usability testing, but I just think this is interesting.
Well, we're a pretty small team in comparison to some of our competitors. So we have three UX designers. So that's Maggie, Marissa, and I, who are on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And then we have our creative director, Jared Ponchet. So it's four of us all together. That's it.
Now, how many are typically on a project together?
It could be anywhere from one person to all four of us. There have been projects in the past where the entire design team has worked on a project. Typically, right now, it's in between, one to two people. I think we found that two people is kind of our sweet spot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if it's a pretty tight deadline, somebody will jump on and it'll be three people for a while and somebody will rotate off. So there's two near the end of the project where things start to slow down.
Makes sense. Do each of you have certain specialities, or are you all kind of the same as far as different areas of design?
We definitely have a lot of specialities. Okay. Everyone brings a little bit something different to the table, and everyone has a little bit of a different background. I've learned a ton from Marissa about photography on our last retreat, for example, and graphic design backgrounds, print backgrounds. Everybody, has a little bit of something.
Macaroni and cheese backgrounds.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, a little packaging.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a more traditional graphic design background originally with print and packaging. And so definitely, the sort of visual communication sort of stuff that goes into UI, I think, is a big part of my background that comes out daily. And I think one other distinction that I might have from the others is a lot of times I'm helping with the design project management as well. So Lullabot has some really awesome technical PMs, and they're doing management of a much larger project. And sometimes we have to give a little help in connecting that to the design portion of that project. So helping just keep us organized. And Maggie has, I think, spearheaded a lot of our research and specialized in that. Not to just steal your thunder there, but that's something that I've learned a lot from her about.
You have a background there, right, Maggie?
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm kind of a mutt with design. So I've been, all over the place in my career, and research has just always been, I've always been interested in a lot of areas, whether it's visual design. I actually worked as a front end developer. Matt, you and I have previous company experience where, I worked for Blackbaud, where I worked with nonprofits.
And I was in the nonprofit world. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. So I was in the nonprofit world for, I think, 5 years, and front end development was a huge a huge, I guess, specialty of mine there, or something I worked on, and also visual design. So I've been in a lot of companies where I needed to take on a lot of roles, but really research was what there was so much value in research. And it always, when I think back to any project I've ever worked on, it all starts at research. If it's a big funnel, you know, the beginning of a project is all about asking awesome questions and really getting to the heart of what makes this project meaningful. Who are the people we're serving? What is the, you know, the market look like, and who are our competitors? And if you ask those great questions in the beginning, then, you know, fanning out from there, everyone's going to be affected, whether we're working on front end development or visual design or, you know, graphic design, print design. If those questions in the beginning weren't answered well, then, you know, you're just not going to have a successful end solution. And so always kind of knowing that that was so important brought me back to research and kind of made that an interest. Although, you know, some of the other areas are more visual and fun, but that there's just so much value there that can't be ignored. What about you, Jen? What's your background look like?
So my background is in traditional graphic arts, like Marissa. I actually worked as an exhibit designer for a while before Flash caught my eye.
So that's why you're so good with the 3D work.
Yeah. So Flash is really what got me into web design, and it kind of just went from there. So, which, you know, we don't use Flash now, but I'm kind of happy that I learned it, because ActionScript was kind of a jumping point for me to learn JavaScript and HTML and CSS. And that's how I basically kind of moved into web. Like Maggie, I've had to wear many hats. Most of the companies that I worked for in the past have been pretty small, like 2 to 3 people. Sometimes.
Oh, wow.
So I've had to do everything from account to project management down to front-end development and design. And the last company that I worked for, it was just me, another developer, and a creative director, and that was it. And so if you didn't know how to do something, you had to learn how to do it. And you had to learn how to do it pretty quickly. And that's where I also learned how to do WordPress.
It's all right. WordPress is okay.
Yeah.
You could say that one.
And that kind of jumped me into the content management world. And from WordPress, I was able to learn a little bit about Drupal. So.
Yeah. I think that's kind of how we all got in there. Well, maybe not through WordPress, but a lot of people did, you know, just by kind of starting off on one little thing and kind of moving your way. It's really cool that you've done Flash. I have a secret project for you that I'm going to talk about after this podcast that involves Flash. It's going to be awesome.
That's awesome that that Flash was your gateway drug, because it was for me as well. I was in the nonprofit world, and I got sent to, I guess we had vouchers for corporate training at a place called New Horizons. So I got sent to a Flash class, and I sat there and I learned basic tweening and, you know, simple Flash stuff. And I remember the instructor saying, oh, and if you want to do other things, you can use ActionScript. So of course, you know, me goes home and Googles ActionScript and starts figuring out how to do all kinds of things. So that kind of turned me into the, I was like, oh, well, I can do this Drupal thing now. PHP isn't all that different, is it?
Yeah.
Sure.
It really isn't.
So let's go back to usability testing, right?
Good segue. That's the good
best
segue.
Transition ever.
Yeah. Yes. Silence is consent.
So what can we do better with usability testing? What are we looking to improve?
One thing I think that we've mentioned already that we could do better with is figuring out how to pull our recruits. You know, when we did it with social media, we spent a lot of time on it, and at each phase there were a lot of people getting dropped off, and even people that said they were interested, then we would schedule and we wouldn't hear from them. So that's always hard to get enough recruits for your tests.
I think too, it's just getting more comfortable with including it in the process, even if the even if you get pushback from the client because of budgetary or time issues. Just making sure that letting them know that it doesn't take a lot of time and it doesn't take a lot of budget, and it will actually probably help them save time and budget in the long run. And presenting them the different options of, yes, we can usability test with 5 people with a sketch. We don't have to have, a working prototype in order to get some initial feedback from them. So
I've heard a couple of times the discussion about, putting something in front of a user and it happening over a screen share on a desktop. How do we test mobile?
This is hard. I really like, this isn't our idea. I think it was Jen found this inspiration from MailChimp. And what they do for a remote test, if it's moderated, is let's say you're on a Hangout and you're using screen share and watching them on desktop, then we tell them to go back to their camera and literally flip the laptop around and then put their mobile phone in front of it. So picture someone sitting at their desk and right in their lap is their laptop facing away from them. And then they have their phones, in their hands right in front of that camera. And so that way we can kind of not just watch the screen of the phone, but how are they holding the phone and that sort of thing as well.
It makes some sense.
That sounds useful, but a little awkward.
It's weird. And Envision also does have prototyping for mobile, but it's separate. So you have to build a whole nother prototype to work on a phone. But it does work pretty well. If you send them a link, they can... it pops right up and looks like it's in a browser and navigates pretty well with touch and those sorts of things. So there's options. It's just still something that we're working out.
Yeah, phone interactions when you're tapping are can probably be totally different for a user as compared to, squinting and using a mouse.
Yeah, that's one thing as a front-end developer that I constantly talk to designers about, including Marissa right here, where I say, hey, there's no hover interactions here. How is this going to work? Yeah, so that's something that's pretty useful. Okay, so if I'm a company, a small company or a larger company, and I want to implement user testing, how do I start? What do I do?
Can I rant about this one too?
No. Go ahead.
The ladies. Okay, so this is something that I'm really passionate about because I think a lot of people haven't done their first one and feel like there's this really big hurdle and that there must be this huge learning curve, but there really isn't. And so, I think the dumb answer is go do one. What do you do? Just go try it and you'll see. And I really highly recommend Steve Krug's book, Rocket Surgery Made Easy. This is the second of his user books that is awesome. And it goes on and on about exactly those steps for different testing formats, templates, that sort of thing for moderated, unmoderated. So it's good if you need the information, but it's actually really quite simple. We talked about this before, but the first step is really deciding why you're doing it. What are the goals that you're trying to validate here? Is it a language test? Is it something with functionality where you're testing a new interaction and you need to make sure people can click all the way through it and understand? Is it that you're done with a project and you're just trying to catch any bugs or little hiccups that you didn't find? This really helps you define what your next steps are because you can see what it is that you're actually trying to get done. We talked about different prototyping and different fidelity, and that usually really leads right into that, and it makes it easier than you'd think to be able to say yes, a sketch will work, or no, we need a full site. We've also talked about recruiting users within that audience, and so we'll try to sort of simultaneously reach out to people and start scheduling things and seeing if they have any interest while we're writing some sort of script, because it does take a little bit of time to hear back from them. We can pull an all-nighter and get a script done and plan a prototype or something like that, but we need to usually wait and hear back from our participants. And at the same time, when I say writing a script, that's assuming moderated tests. So, you know, if you're actually walking them through questions and that sort of thing, but if it's unmoderated, you might be writing a survey or adding questions to something like usertesting.com, but there's still some writing involved. And then after you have your, I should mention also to that point, we make this a lot more efficient with boilerplates. Jen has written a ton of these where we've stripped out previous questions that we've written or stripped an email that we've reached out to someone and explained who we are and what we're doing. And it makes it a lot faster to be able to send out those 50 emails because we have that template all ready to go. Maybe we write a custom sentence about what we're doing this time and their name, but you can bang those out pretty quickly. And then conducting the tests, of course, you're going to want to give yourself a time box for this because this could go on forever. So how many tests do you really need? How much do you really need to do? Trying to schedule them in a quick period of time. Like we'll often do some crazy days where we'll have 3 days in a row where, you know, every hour or two we're doing a test and just get them all done together. And as far as the process for conducting those tests, I mean, again, there's lots of different variations with in person and moderated or over Hangout or what have you. But one thing I wanted to really recommend is working in a paper doc with somebody or a Google Doc and having another person there to support you. So we've done this before where we have one person sort of leading and working with the user and they're speaking a lot. And then another designer is listening and working in the document and adding notes, maybe adding questions, maybe directing the moderator to say, ask this next, or deleting a question that we know we don't need to ask now because they already succeeded, and just keeps the whole thing moving. And then if I'm moderating, I like to say at the end, you know, do you have anything to add? And what's really great about having that extra person is after you've done that test, I always recommend to do some sort of summary at the end. So it's fresh in your mind. You have 10 or 15 minutes after that test to say what really stood out to you. And, you know, a lot of times we'll say that was pretty good, except, you know, she really did not get X, Y, and Z. And we'll write that down. And then after we've gone through all of our tests, we can go back through our findings and these little summaries and see all the things that really came up that were unexpected, that need, you know, some additional attention. And from there, we've often just tackled these with a quick discussion. You know, we'll get the team together and say, here's all the things we found, and really quickly go through them and say, does this matter? Does it not? You know, throw some things out. The ones that do matter, you know, we'll make a task to get that change done. Maybe it's a ticket in whatever management system, or, you know, go right back into the design file and make those revisions. But then we're all on the same page about what needs to happen and who needs to do it. Because some of those could be really simple and it's something a developer can do without any input, just based on the conversation, or maybe we need to go back to the drawing board and design, but we can design, decide that all together. Ta-da.
One thing that I wanted to point out is during the usability tests, it's always good to encourage the user to talk freely about what they're thinking and what they're seeing, because they may do one action but are thinking something different. So it's always encouraging them to talk out loud to make sure that you get that recording and you're fully understanding, you know, their thought process as they're using your product or your web design or your design.
I'm coming to the conclusion that what I'm hearing is the scientific method in action.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yep.
Any final thoughts, Maggie?
Well, like Jen and Marissa said, I hope I'm not stealing their thunder here, but just a repeat, like, you know, just give it a try. And, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be time consuming. Like we only need 5 users for a really good, you know, some really good data. But even if you have less than that, you know, if you're just testing your parents or, you know, 3 family members, that's better than 0. So get out there and give it a go.
Marissa, any final thoughts?
My thunder was stolen. I'm just kidding.
So I'll add this. Usability testing, it's a learning process for, at least for us as a team, trying to figure out what works best for us, what works best for each individual client. It's not something where, at least for me, that I felt like I'm an expert at usability testing, because there's always new techniques that are coming out. There's always new problems to solve with usability testing. So, you know, it's definitely a learning process. And, you know, you shouldn't shy away from it just because you feel uncomfortable with it.
Yeah, I'll echo both of you on that. I think that, you know, I highly encourage someone to just try it and just see, because after your first test, you're going to see a million things you could do better. And some of them are really easy and really quick. And then your second and your third are going to be so much better. And it does depend on the situation too, you know, whatever you decide to pick. You might say that, you know, you think you have this great process, and then the next project is really different and you'll have to iterate on that and come up with something new. But once you've done a few, I think it becomes much easier than people think.
Well, thank you.
Hey, sales pitch time, Mike. Of course, you know, anybody can go out and do their own, but Lullabot would be happy to help you out.
Yeah, I hear we have some experts on it.
So I'm told.
We'd love to.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you guys. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to get back and act like I'm working.